Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Thanks for listening to this special Best of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge on Faith Radio. If we're gonna fly, we fly like eagles.
Well, how are you feeling on this 28th of December? I don't know about you, but this is the point in time when I always like start regretting the money that I maybe overspent, the people for whom I maybe overbought, and definitely the fact that I overate. So let me encourage you today to get outside and get a little exercise, do something that, you know, sort of refreshes your spirit and renews your soul. It's a really good time of this week and certainly of this year to think about cleaning out and cleaning up and scaling back. So I hope you take the opportunity to just check in on some of those priorities today, even as you pray the news and prepare to live in the world that God so loves in ways that honor Jesus. So thanks again for including me in your day today. You're listening to a best of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge. And so first up, we're going to revisit a conversation that I had with Don Wilton. This is about what it was really like to know first person, be in the presence of, and really fellowship with Billy Graham. I hope you enjoy it. We'll be right back. Gracias, sublime. All right, again, our bumper music today is all in Spanish. We're celebrating Cinco de Mayo with our Spanish language friends. So joining me now, Pastor Don Wilton. This is absolutely a delight today. We are sharing with you a brand new book. In fact, it's not even out yet. Saturdays with Billy, My Friendship with Billy Graham. It actually drops on April the 13th, but we've got Don here with us today. Don Wilton, welcome. Welcome. Oh, it's April 13th. It's already May. All right. I feel better. I didn't want to be like way ahead of the publication date. There you go. Welcome, Don, to Mornings with Carmen.
Well, thank you, Carmen. It's just an absolute delight to be with you and our listeners. What a fantastic time and just a total joy.
It's so fun. It's so fun to have you here. Okay. So for 15 years, you drove what I have estimated to be an hour and a half each way to spend Saturdays with Billy Graham. Okay, what did you do and what did you talk about and how did you choose the 20 stories that you share in Saturdays with Billy?
Well, thank you so much. It actually was longer than 15 years, not that that matters, but it actually began in 1993. It was really close to 25 years.
Wow.
It was very interesting. It was very interesting, Carmen, because from, the first time that he invited me up there, for the first 10 years, our friendship just grew to such a very precious level. And I just never talked about it. I never shared or told people. My wife knew about it and a couple of close friends, but because of who Mr. Graham was, I just never told a lot of people. And then in 2005, he called me one day, and I went up there to the house, and he had all his staff and everybody was there, and he announced that he was asking me if he could officially become a member of our church at First Baptist Spartanburg in the upstate of South Carolina. It was just a wonderful time, and then he went public with it. And when he announced that publicly, of course, it was picked up by media and people all around the world. That was when everything went public. And so I enjoyed just the most amazing privilege of sitting at the feet of this wonderful man, and for all those years, being with him mostly in private, the two of us, our friendship was very deep. And I tell many people that, you know, he asked me to hold his hand while he went to heaven, and that literally took place. And even in Saturdays with Billy, in one of my chapters there, I write about the last time I was with him just before he passed on and went to be seated at the feast table of the King. So, Carmen, our relationship was two people having a friendship that was just unparalleled. That doesn't make sense. I've told people, if you want a picture of this, and I really mean this, this picture of Billy Graham and Don Wilton, literally, you would see a nobody who thought he was somebody sitting, talking, and fellowshipping with a somebody who really thought he was a nobody. Everything was backwards. Because Dr. Billy Graham was such a humble and precious man of God. And so Saturdays with Billy is not a biography. I make no effort. There's no biography. There are many wonderful biographies about Mr. Graham's life and testimony. This is a very unique book, Saturdays with Billy, that I sat down at the request of the publishers and others and wrote from my heart, giving somewhat of a very deeply personal reflection of a continual conversation with this man, Dr. Billy Graham, in an effort to show the reality of his heart as a person. And I think we're very grateful as to what God has accomplished and what we've been able to produce through Saturdays with Billy.
It's a beautiful book. I mean, it's a beautiful book. The pictures are beautiful. It's a beautiful book in that it is written in a way that really does draw the reader in. And again, friends, if you're listening right now, I'm talking with Don Wilton. We are talking about his new book, Saturdays with Billy, My Friendship with Billy Graham. And yes, we have copies to give away. So if you are interested in entering the drawing, go ahead and text the word book to 877-933-2484. Don, I feel confident that there are stories, well, I know there are, that didn't make it into the book. You tell 20, they are each and every one absolutely precious. What would have been story 21?
I think that story 21, 22, 25, and 70... You know, the funny thing is, I'm sure our listeners will appreciate, if I may just say this, to put that into context, I actually write in Saturdays with Billy about very early in my relationship with him. I mean, very early. This was in 1993, 94. We were up there, and my wife, Karen, was with me, and we were having tea with Mr. and Mrs. Graham. I mean, Mrs. Ruth Graham was just the most beautiful, precious lady one can possibly imagine. Just loved her so much. Not half as much as Mr. Graham did, but just loved her and missed her so much after she went to heaven. And Mr. Graham suddenly got up. He was still in crusades and meeting with prime ministers and presidents. We had everybody coming around. I mean, it was an amazing time. And he got up to go to the study or something. Something inside of me said, this is my opportunity. And I reached down and picked up my big old bazooka video camera and started taking a picture of Karen and Miss Ruth having tea together, and all of a sudden, Mr. Graham came back into the room. And I looked over my shoulder and saw his look on his face. Something told me this was not a very good idea. And I very quickly put the video camera back in its bag. That was the last recording ever that I made of me and Mr. Graham. So, to your question, what would I write about? I would continue the recording that I have in my heart that covers so many conversations, so many things that were in his heart, because our conversation was about family, about friends, about occasions, about hurts, Carmen, about pain, about suffering, so many queries about the Word of God, understanding God's Word, the work of the Holy Spirit, the manner, the world in which we lived. We talked endlessly about end times and about how God's Word speaks to the day and age in which we live. It was like he was a proverbial prophet, Carmen. He saw things and understood things that would leave me symbolically with my mouth open. And we talked for hours, and we fellowshipped. And while this was going on, we were playing with the dogs. You know, we were walking on the trails behind the house. We were laughing. I would make him laugh his head off, you know. And he loved that. He loved my sense of humor. And I write about his humor in the book. You know, I talk about that. What made this? How do you interpret him? And what did he enjoy? What did he love? And how did he relate to life? He was a wonderful family man. His family meant so much. And his beloved wife, Miss Ruth, was the treasure of his heart. There were so many times after she went to heaven, we would be having tea together or eating barbecue ribs or doing something together, and he would see her. I'm just telling you, he would see her, and he would talk to me about it. He would tell me about dreams. He would have dreams, and many times in the last 10 years, I would go up, and he'd say, Don, I had a dream last night, and so for the next hour, we'd be sitting there talking about these dreams that he would have, and how what we thought it meant. If you understand what I'm saying.
Sure. You know? Oh yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, yeah, absolutely. All right, Don, you and I have to take a very, very brief break. I am talking with Pastor Don Wilton. We are talking about his new book, Saturdays with Billy, My Friendship with Billy Graham. We'll be right back. All right, I'm continuing my conversation with Don Wilton. We're talking about his book and his experience, really, Saturdays with Billy, My Friendship with Billy Graham. They spent countless Saturdays together over many, many years. Don was Billy Graham's pastor, preached at his funeral, opened the Bible with him, walked with him in the woods. These are the stories of the heart of a friend. And it's just a delight to read. If you would like to enter the drawing for the copies we have to give away, just text the word book to 877-933-2484. Don, you say in the book that Billy's life mission was really people. I'm going to read this one brief quote and ask you to reflect on it. As he sat and stared, it was as though he was back among those tribes and cultures. He could hear their languages. He could remember the interpreters who would help him spread the message of hope. The people were his life's mission. His eyes were firmly fixed on them.
Carmen, it was Mr. Graham had the world in his eyes, held tightly into the frame of his heart. And he would, these are my words, obviously, it was as though he was seeing every individual person through the eyes of the Lord Jesus. When Mr. Graham spoke about people, he spoke about them collectively as people, but he saw them individually in the presence of the Lord. And he was so passionate about the fact that Christ died for every single person. And we would talk when he spoke about nations, about crusades. You and I, particularly me, I would see these crusades and be a part of these meetings where there were, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. When he spoke, he would see one person at a time. One person at a time. I would see him and reflect upon the masses of people who would respond during that invitation when he would invite you to come from the top of the stadium. Why don't you come? And you'd see all these people. He would talk about them in terms of that one person at a time. Mm-hmm. And it was an amazing thing. And that was very particularly seen in the way in which he spoke to and treated every person, because I was with him. It didn't matter whether the person who was with us was the President of the United States or the Prime Minister of England or the Queen of England, or whether that person was the man who raked the leaves on his front lawn. It didn't matter to him. He spoke to everybody the same way, and he looked at them the same way, and you could feel the same compassion and love in the same way. He was not a respecter of persons in terms of status or ability. He looked at people as people for whom Christ died, imminently capable of doing wonderful things in and through the Lord Jesus Christ. He saw the immense potential of every individual person.
It is a very precious and honorable look into the life of a man whom we all revere, and that is Billy Graham. But you do so in such a way, Don, it's just so sweet. The book is Saturdays with Billy, My Friendship with Billy Graham. The author is Don Wilton, senior pastor of the First Baptist Church in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Don, thank you so much for joining us today. What an absolute delight.
Thank you, Carmen, for having me. What a privilege. I'm so grateful to you.
And I would be remiss if I didn't remind you as chief to get a plan together for Ducky this Mother's Day.
Thank you. I need that.
Blessings.
I promise you, Ducky is worth every bit.
Blessings. All right, friends, Saturdays with Billy, My Friendship with Billy Graham. We'll be right back. So we all look around our communities and we recognize that people who are unsheltered, people who are homeless or houseless are of real concern, right? And it seems to be a growing challenge that we face in our communities across the country today. And so we're going to tee up again a conversation that we had with Amber Fogarty from Mobile Loaves and Fishes about the Community Mobile Village in Texas. It's a planned community for the poor. It's not just transitional housing. It's actually like a living community of people who are learning together, you know, what it is like to not only have a home of their own, but take responsibility and live in community with one another. It's a really uplifting and also challenging story. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. It's coming up in about 5 minutes. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. All right, joining me now, Amber Fogarty. She works with an organization called Mobile Loaves and Fishes in Austin, Texas. Amber, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you so much, Carmen. It's great to be here.
It is wonderful to have you. All right, so we are energized and enthused by what is happening through this tiny home village just outside of Austin, or maybe inside of Austin city limits. I don't exactly know where it's located, but tell us about this planned community, this master planned community. Tell us who lives there and how this all works, because it's an inspiring model for others.
Absolutely. So Mobile Loaves and Fishes created a village called Community First Village, and it is just outside the city limits of Austin. And currently it is a 51-acre master planned community that lifts people who have experienced long-term homelessness off the streets into a permanent home and a supportive community. And what we believe at Mobile Loaves and Fishes is that the single greatest cause of homelessness is the profound catastrophic loss of family. And so the village is designed to create family, to create community, to bring people together in relationship and to support people who have experienced tremendous trauma and suffering in their lives, and provide for them a place where they are fully and wholly known and fully and wholly loved.
And I love the stories that are included in the feature that that I had the opportunity to read related to this from Austin 360. One of the things that I really appreciated was the window into the people kind of behind the whole thing, Alan and Tricia Graham. Can you introduce us to them? And because what I want people to get is that, like, all of this grew out of one individual's sort of transforming experience with Jesus. And then that's just extended and extended and extended and is now genuinely leading to real redemption in the lives of so many people.
Absolutely. So we always say that Mobile Loaves and Fishes started with a tiny mustard seed of an idea, and only God knew what it was going to grow into. And we all marvel at what he has done and how he has grown this ministry over the last 23 years. Alan went on a church retreat all those years ago and really was moved and inspired and really knew that God was calling him to do something with his life that he had never imagined. And so the tiny mustard seed of an idea really began with taking a minivan out on the streets with a group of his friends and connecting human to human, heart to heart with people experiencing homelessness, feeding them, taking, you know, meals out there, getting to know people, getting to know their stories. And Alan is a serial entrepreneur. And so pretty quickly after those first few times out on the streets, he got a vision in his head of a food truck, and he thought about that as a way that we could get food from people who have abundance to people who lack abundance. And all along the way, you know, God has just continued to show up around every corner. And we started, you know, in a green minivan, which transformed into, you know, one catering truck, which is now multiplied into 12 catering trucks across the city of Austin. So every night of the week, volunteers from churches across our city are out on the streets and under bridges and visiting people in urban camps. And what we do on those food trucks has nothing to do with food. It has everything to do with that human to human, heart to heart relationship and opportunity to look someone in the eye, to know their name, to hear their story, to pray with them, and to let them know how loved they are. And that this beautiful faith community in Austin, Texas, is showing up for them. Alan and Tricia are two of the most extraordinary servant leaders I've ever met in my life. They have sacrificed in so many ways. And when people hear the story of Mobile Loaves and Fishes and they hear what Alan and Tricia and their family have done, it really is a story that says to us, you know, what is God asking of me? Because all God asked of this family at the beginning was to go out and feed people, to go out and connect to people. And that's something that every one of us can do. And so we look at our work at Mobile Loaves and Fishes as a great invitation. It's an invitation to each of us to really search our hearts and ask, what is God asking you to do with your life, with the gifts and talents he gave you? How is he asking you to serve his people? And when you step out in faith like that, you never know what that tiny mustard seed will grow into. And Mobile Loaves and Fishes is a beautiful manifestation of that.
Okay, so one of the really unique features of this, because there's people listening right now who are like, I'd really like to like go and see that for myself. I'd like to check it out. It's hard for me to, you know, imagine, wow, I mean, these people lived in this, you know, 3,000 square foot home in their own gated planned community. And now they live in a 399 square foot tiny home in the midst of a very different kind of community. you know, who are these people behind this? What is this ministry? What does this look like? How is it fleshed out? There's people asking those questions right now. I tell people about the Community Inn because this is a part of this story that I find just brilliant. Like, this is a brilliant way to get people, give people the opportunity to come and see what's happening.
Yeah, so on site at Community First Village, we have the Community Inn, which provides the opportunity for people to come and experience Community First Village for themselves. And you can stay in an RV or a tiny home and really just have the opportunity to experience the goodness of Community First Village. You can come and volunteer. You can shop in our on-site market where we feature the beautiful products that our neighbors make in our art program, our jewelry making program, across all of these various programs that we've created to help our neighbors experience the dignity of work and earn a dignified income. But staying at the Community Inn is, you know, it was one of the brilliant ideas of Alan and others in our community who said, we're going to create this really special place and we want to create a place that is open to the community, that's available for people, not just in Austin, but beyond. So we have people from all over the world who come to visit Community First Village, some of them because they desire to replicate our model in their own city, others because they are curious about tiny homes, others because they are coming to be of service, they're coming for a mission trip, or just to volunteer with their family at the village. But it is a great way to be able to experience the day-to-day life of the village, to get to know our neighbors who call Community First Village home. And the way that I like to describe it is that when you come to Community First Village, you feel community, you feel the love that exists on this 51 acres, and staying at the inn gives you a front row seat to that. It gives you the opportunity to feel enveloped in the love and care that exists within this community.
It's such an extraordinary place and testimony. We're going to continue this conversation with Amber Fogarty in just a moment. If you want to read more and see pictures, you could go to austinmonthly.com. There's a feature there, Community First. Village celebrates its fifth anniversary. More on Community First and Mobile Loaves and Fishes next. All right, I want to give you the website, MLF. That's for Mobile Loaves and Fishes, MLF.org. If you want to look for the Community First page, or the Community First Village, I encourage you to do so. That has been one of the topics of our conversation with Amber Fogarty from Mobile Loaves and Fishes in Austin, Texas, MLF.org. I want to read a couple of paragraphs, Amber, from the piece in Austin Monthly, because there's this great quote in here I have to scroll back. Isn't that terrible? Alan Graham. And he says this: homelessness is like a traffic roundabout. There's multiple roads that lead in, like adverse childhood experiences, mental health issues, addiction. But the superhighway into this is catastrophic loss of family. Most folks end up on the street because they've lost their support systems. That's why we're not a transactional model that provides services and then sends people on their way. We want them here for life. And so you really are, I mean, you've highlighted this already, but there really is an emphasis on building permanency and community. And you've talked a little bit about the litany of resources that folks can access at the Community First Village. And I think that that is it's really, really helpful. This takes a person like Mr. Graham, who has an entrepreneurial spirit. It also takes people like the Grahams who are willing to move into community with others. Talk about the missionals.
Yes, we refer to the missionals as the secret sauce of Community First Village. So our missional neighbors are people who are called by the gospel to live in community with our neighbors who have experienced homelessness. So from the beginning of Community First Village, the goal was to have approximately 20% of the community be missional, be people who have gone through an in-depth discernment process and who have said, I believe that God is calling me into this life of service. And so I am going to live in Community First Village. I am going to become family to the neighbors who live there. And I can't tell you how extraordinary these men and women are. We have such a diverse group of folks. We have folks who are retired. We have folks who are school teachers. You know, we have a hairdresser, a massage therapist, teachers. It's such a phenomenal group of people who have said yes to God's call in their life, who have discerned that they are called to do God's work in this particular way, by living in community and by showing up day after day in deep relationship with people who have suffered and struggled, quite frankly, in ways that are hard for most of us to imagine. The kind of suffering and the kind of trauma that our neighbors have experienced really breaks your heart. Alan does a podcast, which I highly recommend, and you can also find a link to that on the Mobile Loaves and Fishes website. It's called The Gospel Con Carne, The Gospel with Meat. And during those podcast episodes, he interviews neighbors and they talk about their stories. They talk about where they have been and what they have experienced in their lives. And it really gives us an opportunity to understand just how resilient they are, that they have survived things that most of us can't even fathom. And they're resilient. And I believe, quite frankly, they're the wisest people I've ever had the opportunity to know. And I thank God daily that I have the opportunity to be in deep relationship with our neighbors, to get to know them and to learn from them, because they have so much to teach us.
All right, now I'm on the page for Gospel Con Carne podcast. Again, you can find it at the Mobile Loaves and Fishes website, mlf.org. I also clicked on like area locations where I could find the food trucks today. So that's really cool. You can literally like print out an itinerary. But one of the other cool things on the site is this just information about how to get your basic needs met in your city. So there's this basic needs map. For those of you that live in, you know, let's say you live in the Twin Cities and you're thinking to yourself, you know, I recognize that homelessness is a real challenge and a real problem where I live, but the people are not a problem. The people are experiencing real challenges, having their basic needs met, and then have complicated histories and other life-controlling issues that are preventing them from, at this point, being able to live in what you consider normal. Like, right, this is part of the challenge that we face, is these definitions of normalcy. So I want you to check out what Mobile Loaves and Fishes is doing. I want you to look at the basic needs map. Like, what would be true in your community? Location of restrooms that are available to everyone, or showers or hand-washing stations, which reminds me of the conversations that we've had here on the program about, you know, the people that are setting up hand washing stations in cities across the country, charging stations for phones, basic needs map. And then that also gives you access to the Eating Apart Together initiative. So can you talk with us briefly, because COVID like seemed to get people energized and interested in mapping some things out, and particularly addressing people's real need for food in local communities across the country, something that we've counted on maybe our schools to be points of distribution for. And in COVID, those schools were no longer points of distribution for food for many, many people. Talk with us a little bit about the way you guys collaborate with others, because this is obviously a collaborative effort in Austin.
Absolutely. You know, COVID created so many challenges for all of us, but particularly for people in poverty, and people experiencing homelessness have, you know, they had really the rug ripped out from underneath them. So while all of us went into quarantine in the comfort of our homes, our neighbors who don't have homes had so much change in their lives. Not only were they experiencing the trauma of being unhoused, but many of the resources that they relied upon, many of the places that they went to get fed, shut down completely or change their operations. And so I think one of the things that has been helpful about COVID is it has raised awareness for people about some of these issues, because in our day-to-day lives, sometimes we don't think about the fact that you know, we, if we need something to eat, most of us can, you know, walk into our refrigerator or walk to our refrigerator, walk to our pantry. We can take care of our basic needs, the basic need for food. And COVID really helped to elevate for folks, oh, wow, this is really difficult. And we have a whole system for how some of these things happen, but COVID changed that. So you mentioned schools, even, you know, areas where people served in a congregate setting to serve food, all of that had to change. And I am grateful for the increased awareness, but deeply saddened by the increased suffering during, you know, the pandemic. And, you know, we're not out of the woods yet as far as that suffering. And our friends on the streets still struggle to meet their basic needs every day. One of the things that people say to us a lot at Mobile Loaves and Fishes, when they see, you know, a camp under an overpass or under a bridge somewhere, they talk about how much trash there is and how messy it is. And so I always just ask them to imagine what would happen if the trash pickup to their home stopped for several months. If you weren't having the trash picked up, or if you no longer had sewage service at your home, if you couldn't use the restroom at your home, how would that impact your ability to live in, you know, a place of cleanliness and health? And that's what our neighbors who are on the streets experience every day. When you are on the streets, if you try to walk into any place to go to the restroom, if you try to walk into a restaurant, you often are chased right back out the door because they don't want you to come in there. And you see those signs that say, you know, restrooms are for paying customers only. That's often targeted at our friends on the streets. And we don't have a lot of those basic needs provided in our communities. And I think COVID elevated our awareness of that. And I hope that as we continue to move out of the pandemic, that we remain focused on the fact that we have to provide these basic needs as we're preparing to lift people off the streets into a home.
I just love it. I love what you're doing. I love the spirit in which you're doing it. I love that you're inviting other people in. For those of you that were trying to help me remember the Ministry of Love Beyond Walls, Terrence Lester has been with us on a couple of occasions. Love Beyond Walls, the group that is supporting efforts to stand up hand washing stations in cities across the country. So just thank you, Amber, for who you are. Please give our greetings to the rest of the folks on your team at Mobile Loaves and Fishes. Please celebrate with them how enthusiastic we all are about what's happening there and the way that this can serve as a model for others across the country. We genuinely appreciate it.
I will absolutely do that. And I would just invite your prayers for our ministry and for the men and women who are still experiencing homelessness throughout the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Amber, so very much. We're praying with you and for you. That's Amber Fogarty. Again, you can find resources about what we discussed today at Mobile Loaves and Fishes, which is mlf.org. We'll be right back. Being a person of encouragement and even a person who empowers another person to see the positive possibilities of the life before us. Like, I just feel like at this time of year, helping people see hope on the horizon is so essential and important. And so let me encourage you today, if you're feeling like there's not hope on the horizon, let me just say confidently that there is hope. You are loved. You are seen. God is accounting for the circumstances of your life, and he's available and he loves you. He is ready and willing to bring his force to bear upon the challenges that you're facing today. And so just want to encourage you in that God is present and he is faithful and he is working. Thank you so much for joining us today on this special episode of Mornings with Carmen. This is a best of, but you can still communicate with us. We'd love to hear from you. You can always send me an email, carmen@myfaithradio.com. And thank you again for those of you who have given this year and those of you who are in a position to make a year-end gift. You can do that at myfaithradio.com. Have a great day and God bless.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.